is in a lord of war that he could only kill in anger, whose means to glory is death, and he knew it was his weakness that he could not kill coldly or carelessly or for a cause. And he thought it weakness that he could not keep his anger against the people, and he told himself he ought still to hate them because they had been so dull and stubborn and had not thought of a way to open the gates to him. Yet when his soldiers came sheepishly to ask for their food, he cried at them in a confusion of fury and pain, "What, must I feed you even when you loot?" To this they made answer, "There is not a handful of grain in this whole city, and we cannot eat gold and silver and silks. These we find, but no food, for the farmers are still afraid to come in with their produce." And Wong the tiger suffered and was sullen because he saw that what they said was true, and he could not but order them fed, although when he did he shouted in his surliest tones. But once he heard a hearty, rude fellow cry coarsely, "Yes, and the wenches are all so thin they are like plucked fowls, and there is no pleasure in them at all." Then suddenly Wong the tiger could not bear his life, and he went away into a room by himself, and he sat and groaned for a while, before he could harden himself again. But he did harden himself once more. He thought of the fair lands, and he thought how he had enlarged his power, and how he had in this war more than doubled the country over which he ruled. And he told himself that it was his trade, and his means of greatness, and last and best. He thought of the two women he had, and how from one of them surely his son would be born. And he cried to his own heart, "Cannot I for that one bear that other should somewhat suffer for 3 little days? Thus he hardened himself for the 3 days, and he held himself to his promised word. But on the dawn of the 4th day he rose up early from his restless bed, and he ordered signals given and horns blown everywhere. And it was a sign to all his soldiers that their looting was over, and they must come back to his commands. And because he rose up that morning more than usually fierce and black in his looks, and his black brows darted up and down over his eyes, none dared to disobey him. No, none except one. As Wong the tiger strode out of the gate that had been fast locked these 3 days, he heard a feeble crying in an alley nearby, and being made oversensitive to these cries now, he turned his long steps there to see what it was. In that alley he saw a soldier of his on his way back to the ranks, but he had seen an old woman pass, and on her finger was a thin gold ring. A poor, small, worthless thing, too, for the old woman was only some working wife, and she could not have any great good thing. But the soldier had been overcome with a sudden desire for the last bit of gold, and he wrenched at the old woman's hand, and she cried out at him, wailing, "It has been on my finger nigh upon 30 years, and how can I lose it now?" And the soldier was in such haste, for the bugle was blowing, that there before his own eyes Wong the tiger saw the man whip out his knife and cut off the old woman's finger clean, and her poor scanty blood had still strength enough to spurt out in a feeble stream. Then Wong the tiger gave a great roaring curse, for the soldier had not seen him, he was in such haste. And Wong the tiger sprang at the soldier, and he drew out his keen blade as he sprang and drove it straight through the man's body. Yes, although it was his own man, Wong the tiger did it, because his anger came up in him so to see this wretched, starved creature dealt with as she had been before his very eyes. The soldier fell without a sigh, and his own blood gushed out in a hearty red stream. As for the old woman, she was terrified at such fierceness, even if it was to succor her, and she wrapped her smarting stump in her old apron, and ran and hid herself somewhere, and Wong the tiger did not see her again. He wiped his sword on the soldier's coat then, and he turned away lest he repent what he had done, and it was useless to repent since the man was dead. He stayed only to command one of his guards to take the dead man's gun. Then Wong the tiger went through the city, and he was astonished beyond any measure to see the few wretched people there were, and how they came crawling out into their doorways and sat listless on the benches upon their thresholds, too weak to lift their heads even to look at Wong the tiger as he came striding along in the bright sunshine of autumn, and his guards glittering and clattering behind him. No, they sat there as though they were dead, so dull and still they were, and some strange shame and astonishment was in Wong the tiger's heart, so that he did not stay to talk with any man. He held his head very high, and he pretended he did not see the people, and only the shops. There were many goods in these shops, such as he had not seen before, since this city was on the river to the south, and the river ran to the sea, and such goods could be brought in. Yes, Wong the Tiger saw many curious foreign things he had not seen before, but they were carelessly placed now and covered with dust as though no one had come to buy for a long time. But two things he did not see in this city. He saw no food anywhere for sale, and the marketplace was empty and silent, and there were no vendors or hucksters in the streets, such as make busy any town and city. And he saw no little children. At first he did not notice how quiet the streets were, and then he noticed and wondered for the reason of the quietness, and then it came to him that he missed the noisy voices and laughter of the children, with which every house is filled in usual times, and he missed their darting and running upon the streets. And suddenly he could not bear to look at the thin, dark, dull faces of the men and women who were left. He had done no more than any lord of war may do, and it could not be counted to him for a crime, since there was no other way in which he could rise. But Wong the Tiger was truly too merciful a man for his trade, and he turned and went back to his courts because he could not bear to see this city now his, and he was cast down and ill-humored, and he swore at his soldiers, and he roared at them to be out of his way, for he could not endure at all the sound of their loud, satisfied laughter, and the sight of their satiate, glittering eyes, and he looked with rage upon the gold rings they had on their fingers, and the foreign watches they had hung on them, and many such things they had taken. Yes, he even saw gold rings on the fingers of his two trusty men, upon the hawk's hard hand a ring of gold, and a jade ring upon the thumb of the pig butcher, that was so large and coarse a thumb the ring stuck halfway upon the joint and would go no further. But still he wore it so. Seeing all this, Wong the Tiger felt very far and separate from all these men, and muttered to himself that they were low and beast-like fellows, and he was lonely to the depths of his being, and he went and sat alone in his room in mighty ill humor, and bellowed for the smallest cause if anyone came near him. But when he had sat thus a day or two, and his soldiers, seeing how angry he was, were frightened and calmed themselves somewhat, Wong the Tiger hardened himself once more, and he told himself that such were the ways of war, and he had chosen this way of life, and heaven had destined him as he was, and he must finish what he had begun. So he rose and washed himself, for he had sat these 3 days unwashed and unshaven, he was so angry, and he clothed himself freshly, and he sent a messenger to the magistrate of the city that he must come and submit himself. Then Wong the Tiger went into the guest hall of this palace, and sat down there and waited for the man to come. In an hour or two the magistrate came with what haste he could muster, and he came in leaning on two men. A very ghastly, pale figure of a man he looked, but he bowed to Wong the Tiger and waited, and Wong the Tiger saw this man was well-born and a scholar by his gentle looks. He rose, therefore, and bowed in return, and he motioned that the magistrate was to be seated. Then Wong the Tiger was seated too, and he could but sit and stare at this other, for the magistrate's face and his hands were the strangest and most dreadful color, and it was the hue of a liver that has been dried for a day or two, and he was so thin one would have said his skin was glued to his bones. Then Wong the Tiger cried out suddenly in the midst of his wonderment, "What? Did you starve too?" And the man answered simply, "Yes, since my people did also, and it is not the first time."
"But the man they sent out to make truce the first time was fed well enough," said Wong the Tiger.
"Yes, but they fed him specially from the first," answered the magistrate, "so that if you would not make truce, you would see they had stores left to eat and could hold out longer."
Then Wong the Tiger could not but approve such good guile as this, and he cried out in wonder and admiration of it, and he said,
"But the captain who came out was well fed, too."
The magistrate answered simply,
"They fed the soldiers best and to the last the best they could, but the people starved, and many hundreds of them are dead. All the weak and the very old and the young are dead."
And Wong the Tiger heaved a sigh and said,
"It is true I saw no babes anywhere."
And he stared a while at the magistrate, and then he forced himself to say what he must, and he said,
"Submit yourself to me now, for I have won the right to take that other lord of war's place over you and over this whole region over which he ruled. I am the ruler now, and I add this to my dominion I have already to the north. The revenue shall come into my hand now, and I will demand of you a certain sum fixed and beyond that a proportion of revenues every month.
This Wang the Tiger said with some few courteous words afterwards, for he was not devoid of such courtesy. The magistrate answered in his weak and hollow voice, moving his dry lips over teeth that seemed too large and white for his drawn mouth.
"We are in your power. Only give us a month or two to recover ourselves."
Then he waited a while, and he said again with great bitterness, "What is it to us who rules over us if we can only have peace, and if we can only pursue our business and have a livelihood and nurture our children? I swear I and my people are willing to pay you in all reason if you will only be strong enough to keep off other lords of war and let us live secure in our generation."
This was all Wang the Tiger cared to know, and now his merciful heart smote him to hear the man's feeble, breathy voice, and he cried out to his soldiers, "Bring in food and wine, and feed him, and the men with him."
And when he had seen this done, he called his trusty men to him, and he commanded them,
"Go out now into the countryside, and take soldiers, and compel the farmers to come in with their grains and their produce, so that the people may buy and eat and recover themselves again after this very bitter war."
So did Wang the Tiger show his justice to all the people, and the magistrate thanked him, and he was moved with his gratitude. Then Wang the Tiger saw how courteous and gently born and reared this magistrate was, for even half-starved as he was, and his eyes glittered at the food that was set on a table before him, he restrained himself, and he dallied and delayed, his trembling hands clasped tightly together, until all the polite and courteous things were said that should be said from guest to host, and until Wang the Tiger could seat himself in the host's place. Then the poor man fell upon the food, and still he tried to hold himself back, and in very pity, Wang the Tiger at last made excuse that he had some affair to which he must go. He went away then and let the man eat alone, for his underlings ate separately. And afterwards, Wang the Tiger heard his men say in wonder that the dishes and bowls needed no washing, so clean the starving men had licked them. Then Wang the Tiger took the sweetest pleasure in seeing the markets of that city fill again, and in seeing the food begin to lie in vendors' baskets along the sides of the streets and on the counters, and he thought he could see day by day that men and women grew fatter, and the dark, livid hue left their faces, and they won back their clear and golden color of health. All through the winter, Wang the Tiger lived in that city, arranging for his revenues and shaping affairs anew, and he rejoiced when children began to be born and women suckled babes again. And the sight stirred some deep in his own heart that he did not understand, except that a longing fell on him to return to his own courts. And for the first time he wondered concerning his own two women, and he planned to return to his own house at the end of that year. Now when Wang the Tiger had finished his siege of the city, the spies whom he kept out in other parts had come to him and told him that there was a great war waging between north and south, and again they came and said the north had won that war once more. Then Wang the Tiger made haste, and he sent a band of men bearing gifts of silver and of silks, and he wrote a letter to the general of the province. This letter Wang the Tiger wrote himself, for he was a little vain of his learning, since few lords of war are learned, and he set on it his own great red seal that he had now he was grown great. In the letter he told how he had fought against a southern general, and had defeated him, and had taken this region that ran by this river for the north. Then the general sent back a very good answer, full of praise for Wang the Tiger's success, and he gave him a very fine new title, and all he asked was that a certain sum be sent him every year for the provincial army. Then Wang the Tiger, since he knew he was not strong enough yet to refuse, promised the sum, and thus he established himself in the state. As the end of the year drew near and Wang the Tiger took stock of his position, he found he had more than doubled his territories, and except for the mountainous parts which were bare, the lands were good and fertile, producing both wheat and rice in measure, and besides this, salt and oils of peanuts and sesame and beans. Now, moreover, he had his own way to the sea, and he could bring in much he needed, and he could be free of Wang the merchant, his brother, when he wanted guns. For Wang the Tiger longed very much to have great foreign guns, and the longing came to him especially because among the things the old robber chief had left were two very strange, huge guns, such as Wang the Tiger had never seen before. They were of a very good iron, without bubbles or holes of any sort in it, and so smooth that some clever ironsmith must have shaped them,
These guns were heavy, too, so heavy that more than 20 men must put forth their utmost strength to lift them up at all. And Wong the Tiger was very curious about these guns, and he longed to see how to fire them, but no one knew how to do it, nor could they find any bullets for them. But at last, two round iron balls were found hid in an old storehouse, and it came to Wong the Tiger that these were for the great guns, and he was in great delight, and he had one of the guns taken out into an open spot in front of an old temple, which had a waste place behind it. At first, no one would come forward to try the gun, but Wong the Tiger offered a very good reward of silver, and at last, the captain who had betrayed the city came forward, wanting the reward and hoping to gain favor, and he had seen the guns fired once. And he set all in readiness, and very cleverly, he fastened a torch onto the end of a long pole, and set fire to the gun from a distance. When they saw the smoke begin, they all ran a long way off and waited, and the gun blew off its great charge, and the earth shook, and the very heavens roared, and smoke and fire streamed out, so that even Wong the Tiger was staggered, and his heart stopped for an instant's fear. But when it was over, they all looked, and there the old temple lay in a heap of dusty ruins. Then Wong the Tiger laughed his noiseless laugh, and he was struck with delight at so good a toy as this, and so fine a weapon of war, and he cried out, "If I had had a gun like this, there would have been no siege, for I would have blown the city gates in." And he thought a moment, and he asked the captain, "But why did not your old chief turn them upon us?" To this the captain said, "We did not think of it. These two guns he captured from another lord of war with whom I was once also, and they were brought here but never fired, and we did not know these balls were here, and we did not think of these guns as weapons at all, so long they have stood here in the entrance court." But Wong the Tiger treasured these great guns very much, and he planned he would buy more balls for them, and he had them brought and set where he could often see them. When he had taken stock of all he had done, Wong the Tiger was well pleased with himself, and he prepared to return to his home. He left a good large army in that city led by his own old men, and the newest men and the new captain he took back with him. After some pondering, he left in highest command in the city two whom he could trust. He left the Hawk, and he left his nephew, who was grown now into a goodly young man, not tall but broad and strong, and not ill to look at except for his pocked face, which would be marred like that even when he lay dead of old age. It seemed to Wong the Tiger a good pair to leave, for the young man was too young to take command alone, and the Hawk could not be wholly trusted. So Wong the Tiger set them together, and he told the young man secretly, "If you believe he thinks of any treachery, send a messenger to me on wings by night and by day." The youth promised, his eyes merry with his joy to be lifted up so high and left alone, and Wong the Tiger could go and be at ease, for a man can trust those of his own blood. Then, having done all well and made all secure, Wong the Tiger returned victorious to his own home. As for the people of that city, they set themselves steadfastly again to build up once more what had been destroyed. Once more they filled their shops and set to work their looms to make silk and cotton cloths, and they bought and sold, and they never talked except of such renewal, for what was past had passed, and heaven lays its destiny upon all. Chapter 23. Wong the Tiger made haste on his homeward journey, although he said it was to see if his army were peaceful as he had left it. And he truly thought this was the chief reason, for he did not understand himself that he made haste for a deeper cause than this, and it was to see if he had any son born to him or not. He had been away from his house close upon 10 months out of a year, and although he had twice received letters from his learned wife in that time, they were such very proper letters and full of such respect that the sheet was full of these words, and little else said except that all was well enough. But the moment he stepped into his own courts triumphantly, he saw at a glance that heaven was over him still, and his good destiny still held. For there in the sunny court, where the south sun shone warm and there was no wind, sat his two wives, and each one held a babe. And each babe was dressed in scarlet from head to foot, and upon their doddering little heads were crownless scarlet caps. The unlearned wife had sewed a row of small gold Buddhas upon her child's cap, but the learned wife, because she was so learned, did not believe in these tokens of good fortune. and she had embroidered flowers upon her child's cap. Except for this, there seemed no difference in the pair of children, and Wong the Tiger blinked at them amazed, for he had not thought of two. He stammered out, "What? What?" Then the learned wife rose, for she was quick and graceful in speech, and she spoke prettily always, very smoothly, and throwing in a learned phrase or a line from some old poem or classic, and she made a show of her shining white teeth as she spoke, and she said, smiling, "These are the babes we have borne for you while you were away, and they are strong and sound from head to foot." And she held up her own for Wong the Tiger to see. But the other wife would not have it held back that she had borne a son, for the learned wife's was a daughter. And she rose too and made haste to say, although she spoke seldom because of her blackened teeth and the gaps where she had none, and now she held her lips close, and she said, "Mine is the son, my lord, and the other is a girl." But Wong the Tiger said nothing at all. Indeed, he could not speak, for he had not known all it would be to have something of his own making belong to him like this. He stood and stared for a while, speechless at these two minute creatures, who seemed not to see him at all. No, they looked placidly at him, as though he had always been there like a tree or a bit of the wall. They winked and blinked at the sunlight, and the boy sneezed over loudly for his size, so that Wong the Tiger was yet more astonished at such a gust coming out of so small a fragment. But the girl child only opened her mouth as a kitten does, and yawned very widely, and her father stared at her while she did. He had never held a child in his arms, and he did not touch these two, nor did he know what to say to these two women at such a time, seeing that his speech had always been of warlike things. He could only smile somewhat fixedly, therefore, even while the men who were with him exclaimed in joy and admiration at the son their general had. And when he heard these exclamations, he muttered out of his deep pleasure, "Well, and I suppose women will breed." And he went hastily into his apartments, being too full of joy for his own comfort. There he washed and ate, and he changed his stiff garments of war for a silk robe of a deep dark blue. And when it was all finished, it was evening. Then he sat down by the brazier of coals, for the night came on quiet and chill with frost, and there Wong the Tiger sat alone and reflected on all that had come about. It seemed to him that destiny favored him at every point, and so favored there was nothing to which he could not attain. Now that he had a son, his ambition took on meaning, and what he did for a purpose. As he thought, his heart swelled in him, and he forgot every sorrow and loneliness he ever had. And he shouted suddenly into the stillness of the room, "I will make a true warrior out of that son of mine." And he rose and slapped his hand against his thigh in his pleasure. He strode about the room then for a while, smiling without knowing he did, and he thought what a comfortable thing it was to have a son of his own. And he thought how now he need depend no more on his brother's sons, for there was his own son to continue his life after him and to increase his domains of war. Then another thought came to him, and it was that he also had a daughter. He spent a little time then wondering what he would do with her, and he stood by the latticed window and fingered the hairs of his beard, and thought of his daughter with reticence, because she was a girl. And at last he said to himself in some doubt, "I suppose I can wed her to some good warrior when the time comes, and it is all that I can do for her." From this day on, Wong the Tiger saw a new purpose in those two women of his, for from them he saw springing yet more sons, true and loyal sons who would never betray him as might another who had not his own blood in him. No longer did he use those two women to free his own heart and flesh. His heart was freed at the first sight of his son, and of his flesh he hoped for his son's trusty soldiers to stand beside him and support him when he grew old and weak. So he went regularly to his two wives, and not more to one than the other, for all their secret, gentle striving for his favor, and he was very well content with them each in her own way, for he sought from them equally but the one thing, and he did not hope for more from the one than from the other. It troubled him no more that he did not love a woman, now that he had his son. Thus the winter passed in content. The New Year festival came and passed also, and Wong the Tiger made more merriment than usual because the year had been so good, and he rewarded all his men with wine and meats and with a bounty of silver. To To each man he gave also such small things as they craved, tobacco, a towel, a pair of socks, and other small things. To his wives also he made a bounty, and at the festival the whole house was very merry. There was but one untoward thing, and it came after the feast day, so that no joy was curtailed. This was that the old magistrate died one night in his sleep. Whether he took too much opium, being heavy with his sleep, or whether the bitter cold overcame him in his drugged heaviness, could not be known. But the matter was reported to Wong the Tiger, and he ordered a good coffin and all to be done for the gentle old man. And the very next day, after it was all finished and the coffin ready to be sent to his old home, for the magistrate had not been native to the province, one came again to tell that his old wife had taken what was left of her husband's opium, and so followed him of her own will. Nor could any grieve, for she was old and sickly, and she never came out of her own courts, and Wong the Tiger had never seen her in his life. He ordered another coffin, therefore, and when all was ready he sent them with three serving men to be taken to their own city in the next province. Then Wong the Tiger sent report in proper form to those above who should know of it, and he sent his trusty hair-lipped man with the letter, and with him some soldiers, and Wong the Tiger said secretly to the trusty man, "There are things not to be said except by mouth to ear, and so I have not written this. But if the chance comes to you, let it be known that I must have a say, and who shall be the civil magistrate here?" The trusty man nodded his head at this, and Wong the Tiger was content. In such confused times as these, he did not fear the hasty coming of any governor, and he could rule very well himself. So he forgot the matter, and he took for his own wives the innermost rooms where the old magistrate had lived, and soon he had forgot that any had ever lived here except himself and his own. The year drew on then to spring again, and Wong the Tiger made up his mind, since he had been so fortunate this year and everything, and he had good reports from his new lands, and the silver flowed in regularly from all his many revenues, so that his soldiers were paid and content and loud in his praise, that he would return for the spring festival to his father's house, and pass the feast day with his brothers. It was a fitting thing for a great house to do, the more especially as it is a season when the sun should repair their father's grave. Wong the Tiger, moreover, had a little reckoning yet to do with his second brother, and he was ready now to be free of such borrowing, and he wished to be free. Therefore, Wong the Tiger sent some soldiers to tell his elder brothers, with all decent courtesies, that he and his wives and his children and their servants would come by the feast day. To this the two brothers, Wong the landlord and Wong the merchant, returned very courteous words of welcome. When all was ready then, Wong the Tiger mounted his high red horse, and at the head of his guard rode forth. But this time they must needs ride slowly, for there were the mule carts where the two women rode, and other mule carts for the maidservants. And Wong the Tiger did ride slowly, and he was proud to do it for such a cause. Riding thus at the head of his cavalcade, his women and his children, he took his place in the generations. Never did his lands look so fair to him, nor so prosperous as they did in this time of bursting spring, of budding willow and unfolding peach blossoms. And seeing the faint tinge of green and peach in every valley and upon every hillside, and seeing the deep brown of moist earth turned to the spring sunshine, he remembered suddenly his father, and how every spring he loved to pluck a sprig of willow and a sprig of blooming peach, and carry them in his hand or put them above the door of the earthen house. And thinking of his father and of his own son, Wong the Tiger felt his place in the long line of life, and he was never any more separate as he had once been, nor alone. For the first time he forgave his father wholly for certain deep angers he had against him as a youth. Nor did he know he forgave. He only knew that some bitterness left in him since his angry boyhood slipped out of him and was blown away as though on a healthy wind, and he was peaceful with himself at last. So Wong the Tiger came to his father's house, and he came in triumph, and not so much as youngest son and youngest brother, but as a man in his own right, by what he had achieved and by the son he had begotten. And they all felt his achievement, and his brothers met him and welcomed him very nearly as though he were a guest. And his brothers' wives contended with each other as to who should be most voluble and ready in her welcome. The truth of it was that the lady of Wong the landlord and the wife of Wong the merchant had struggled with each other as to who should house Wang the Tiger and his family. The lady took it as a matter of course and her right that they should come to her lord's house. For now, as Wang the Tiger's fame began to be known, she felt it would be an honorable thing to have him as guest, and she said,
"It will be fitting, for we chose his wife for him, a very learned and pleasant lady, and she can scarcely be at home with your brother's wife, who is so ignorant. Let her keep the lesser wife if she wishes, but we must have our brother and his lady here. He may be moved by one of our sons, or he may be able to do us some great good. At the very least, he will not be subject to her hints and desires."
But the wife of Wang the merchant said to him importunately and often, and she would not give up her wish at all, "How can our brother's woman know how to feed such a number? And she only used to feeding nuns and priests with their poor vegetable stuffs." There came to be such anger that these two women quarreled face to face over the matter. And seeing the coming and the going and hearing the loud talk that grew more loud as the festival day drew near, and seeing that nothing could be decided, and that each wife for pride's sake would not give up a smallest point, the two husbands met together in their old trysting place in the tea-house, for they were united as they never could have been otherwise by the enmity of their two wives. There they consulted together, and Wang the merchant, who had made his plan, said to his brother, "Let it be as you say, but what do you think if we put our brother and his retinue into that court our father left empty? True, it belongs to his wife Lotus, but she is so very old now and uses it not at all since she has given up gaming, and if we put them there we can divide the expense between us, and this we can use as a reason to our two ladies, and so have peace again." Now once Wang the landlord would have wished to use some way he had thought of alone, but as he grew older and so monstrous in his girth, he grew exceedingly slothful, and he was drowsy much of the day, and he would do anything to avoid trouble. This plan then seemed very good to him, and he wanted to have his powerful younger brother's favor. But still he did not care so much if his second brother did not have more than he. In his growing indolence he had passed the time when he loved guests as he once did, and he was glad not to have those in his house now to whom he must be courteous in season and out of season, and so weary himself. He agreed willingly, therefore, and each man went home to his wife and told her the plan. It was a very good compromise for all, for none lost her way altogether, and each determined secretly to seem to be the one responsible for their comfort. And yet each was pleased that the vast cost of wines and feasts and bounty for serving men and women would be halved, and to all of them this was a sound reason enough. Then those old courts where Wang Lung had lived in the years of his later middle life were swept and garnished and made clean. It was true that Lotus never went into them, and the serving maid sat in them sometimes, but that was all. Lotus was grown very huge and old now, and Cuckoo was her only companion except her slaves, for as she grew old, Lotus's eyes were filmed, and she could not even see at last the cast dice in gaming, or to see what the numbers were in any of the games of chance she loved. One by one the old crones who had used to come to her died, or were bedridden, and only Lotus lived on, alone with those who served her. Her slaves she used very bitterly, and as her eyes failed her tongue grew cruelly sharp, so that the brothers had to pay maidservants very high wages or they could not bear her tongue. As for the slaves who were bought and could not leave if they liked, two of them killed themselves, one of them swallowing her poor glass earrings, and the other hanging herself on a beam in one of the kitchens where she worked, rather than endure longer Lotus's cruelties. Her fat old fingers that were so useless in the strange beauty they still kept, and they were smooth and beautiful when all other beauty had faded from her. Those old fingers could nip and pinch a young girl's arm until the blood came purple under the skin, and sometimes when this did not satisfy her, Lotus would take the coals out of her pipe and press them into tender young flesh. There was not one whom she did not treat thus, if she could, except Cuckoo, and she feared Cuckoo, and leaned upon her for everything. For Cuckoo was what she ever was. In her age, and she was very old now also, she seemed to grow more thin and dry and withered, and yet she had a strength in her old frame that was almost what it had been in youth. Her eyes were sharp and her tongue harsh, and her face, although wrinkled all over, was still red. She was greedy, too, as ever she had been, and if she guarded her mistress against the thievery of other serving women, she herself thieved most heartily from Lotus. Now that Lotus's eyes were filmed, Cuckoo took what she liked from Lotus, and she swelled her own private store. And Lotus, being so old, forgot what jewels she had, and what fur garments, and what garments of satin and silk. And so she did not know what Cuckoo took. If, by chance, she remembered and cried out for something of a sudden, Cuckoo diverted her if she could. And if Lotus was perverse and would not forget, Cuckoo went and fetched the thing from her own boxes and gave it to Lotus. But when, after fingering it a time or two, Lotus forgot again, Cuckoo took it and kept it once more. Nor did a slave or serving woman dare complain, for Cuckoo was the real mistress there, and even the brothers deferred to her, for they knew they could find no one to take her place, and they dared not anger her. When, therefore, Cuckoo said Lotus had given her this or that, the maids were silent, for they knew well that if they complained, Cuckoo was so bitter and evil she could have put poison into a bowl of food and thought nothing of it, and sometimes she would boast of all the skill she had in poisoning to keep them afraid. As for Lotus, she leaned on Cuckoo for everything, as she grew blind, and now because of the mighty weight of her flesh she walked no more except from her bed to the great chair of carved black wood, where she sat a little while after noon and then back to her bed again. Even so she must be supported by four slaves and more, for those pretty little feet of hers, which had once been Wang Lung's pride and pleasure, were nothing but stumps beneath the great and monstrous body, which in other days had been slender as a bamboo and passionately beloved by Wang Lung. When one day Lotus heard the commotion in the courts next hers, and when she asked and heard that Wang the Tiger was coming with his women and children to pass the feast day and worship at his father's grave with his brothers, she grew petulant, and she said,
"I cannot have brats here. I've always hated brats."
This was true, for she was a childless woman, and had always some strange hatred against little children, and especially when she passed her time of such fruitage. Then Wang the landlord, who had come in with his brother, soothed her, and he said,
"No, no, we will open the other gate, so that he need not come near you at all."
Then Lotus cried again in her old, querulous way,
"I forget what son he was of that old man of mine. Was he the one who used to stare at that pale slave I once had, and he ran away when that silly old man of mine took her for himself?"
Then both brothers looked at each other aghast, and they were astonished at this tale and had never heard it. And Wang the merchant said hastily, for Lotus was now very free and obscene in her old age, and talked of her early life so that neither brother allowed his children to come near her, for she did not know decency from indecency, and all her old life would come bubbling to the surface of her lips sometimes. And he said,
"We know nothing of this. Our brother is now a famous lord of war, and he will ill brook such talk as this against his honor."
But Lotus, when she heard this, laughed, and she spat upon the tile floor, and she cried out,
"Oh, and you men are so full of your honor, but we women know what poor stuff your honor is made of."
And she listened for Cuckoo to laugh also, and she cried out,
"Eh, Cuckoo?"
And Cuckoo, who was never far away, gave her thin, shrill cackle of laughter, for she was pleased to see these two middle-aged men, each grave and important in his own way, put to such confusion. As for the two brothers, they hurried away to direct the serving men in all that must be done. When all was ready, Wang the Tiger came with his house, and he took up his abode in these days in the court where his father had lived. It was empty for him now, and swept at last of every presence except his own and his son's, and he could forget that anyone had ever lived there except himself and his son. Then the festival came to this whole house, the festival of spring, and everyone laid aside his private grudge for the once, even the wives of the two elder brothers, when they came together in the family, were formal and courteous with each other. Everything was done in its proper order and in the way it should be done, and there were certain duties at this time which the sons of Wang Lung had toward their father. It happened that 2 days before the festival day was Wang Lung's birthday. Wherever he was, on this day he was 90 years old, and since his sons were together they determined to perform their whole filial duty, and Wang the Tiger was very ready because, since he had his own son, his anger against his father had gone of its own accord, and he was left ready and eager to take his place in the line of father and son and father and son. On this birthday of Wang Lung's, therefore, his sons invited many guests, and a great feast was prepared, such a feast as they would have made if their father had been with them. and there was rejoicing and congratulation, and there was every dish such as is proper at a birthday feast. And they had Wang Lung's tablet there, and made obeisance to it, and they did him honor on his birthday. On the same day, Wang the landlord hired priests, and he spared no money, and each son gave his share. And the priests chanted all their chants for Wang Lung's spirit to give it rest and joy in the happy courts where it now was. And they decked the hall with their sacred emblems and signs. And for half a day the courts were filled with the rise and fall of their chanting voices, and the dull, thick sound of the wooden sticks upon their drums of wood. All this did Wang Lung's sons do in his memory. Beyond this, they and their wives and their sons went out to the place where the graves of their fathers were, and Wang Lung's sons saw to it that every grave was made straight and smooth, and heaped high with fresh earth. Each grave was shaped to a point, and upon the point a clod of earth was put, and white paper cut cunningly into long strips was fastened beneath the clod, and streamed in the sweet spring wind of that day. And Wang Lung's sons bowed to the earth before his grave, and they set incense to burn, and they brought their sons to bow. And proudest of them all was Wang the Tiger, for he took his own fair son, and he bowed the child's little head too, and he was knit to his father's and to his brother's through this child, his son. And as they went home again, they saw that over the whole countryside, wherever there were father's graves and grandfather's graves, there were sons who did what they had done for Wang Lung this day, for it was a day of remembrance. Then Wang the landlord was more moved than he usually was, and he said, "Let us do this more regularly than we have in past years, for we have but 10 more years, and our father will be 100 years old, and then he will have been born again into another body in this world, and we cannot feast his birthday, for it will be a new birth, and he will be unknown to us." And Wang the Tiger, grave in his fatherhood, said, "Yes, we ought so to do for him, as we hope our sons will do for us when we are where he is now." And they went homewards in silence and gravity, each feeling his kinship to the others more than was wont with any of them. After these duties were over, they all set themselves to the merriment of the festival, and when the day of the festival came to evening, the air was unexpectedly warm and sweet, and a little slender, perfect moon hung in the sky, clear and pale as amber. On this night they all gathered in the court where Lotus lived, for she had that day turned plaintive all of a sudden, and she said, "I am a lonely old woman, and they never come near me nor hold me as one of this house at all." And she moaned and wept tears out of her blind old eyes, so that Cuckoo went and told the brothers, and they yielded to her because this day their hearts were unexpectedly tender toward their father and what had been his. Instead, therefore, of feasting in the courts of Wang the landlord, where his lady would have had the family gather, they went to the court where Lotus lived. It was a large and beautiful court, too, with pomegranate trees brought from the south in one corner, and in the center was a small octagonal pool where the new little moon shone reflected. There they all ate cakes and drank wine, and the children rejoiced in the moon's light, and they ran everywhere, hiding in and out of the shadows, and running out again to seize a cake or sup a little wine. They all ate their fill of the steamed delicacies and cakes suitable to this festival, some stuffed with pork chopped fine, and some with brown sugar and very dainty. There was so much that even the slaves ate freely, and the servants filched and ate behind doors, or when they went on a pretense to fetch more wine. Nor was it missed what they took, or if the mistress's sharp eyes noted it, at least for once nothing was said, so that no reproof might mar the night. And as they ate and drank, Wang the landlord's eldest son, who was a very pretty musician, played upon a flute, and his next brother, a lad with nimble, delicate fingers, played upon a harp whose strings he struck lightly with 2 slender bamboo sticks. And they played ancient songs to the spring, and sang a plaint or two of some dead maidens to the moon. When they played so well together, their mother was very proud, and she commended them often, and cried loudly as soon as one song was finished, "Play something else, my sons, for it is pretty to play like this under the new moon." And she was proud of their slender, lovely looks. But the wife of Wang the merchant, whose sons were plainly taught and who knew no toying with music, yawned and talked aloud to this one and to that one, but most of all to the wife she had chosen for Wang the Tiger. She made very much of this one, and she was pointed in her ignoring of the learned wife. She scarcely glanced at Wong the Tiger's daughter, but she could never be done with smelling and nuzzling the boy child, and one might have thought it all due to her that the child was a boy. But still there was nothing open said, although the lady darted looks of displeasure at her sister-in-law, and that one caught them all and took delight in pretending she did not. But no one else seemed to see, and Wong the landlord roused himself, and he ordered the servants to bring the tables for the night's feasts into the courts, and they did. Then everyone set himself to the real food, and the serving men brought in one dainty dish after another, for Wong the landlord gave this feast to them, and he had outdone himself in ordering it. There were many dishes that Wong the merchant and Wong the tiger had never even heard of, such as duck's tongues stewed with spices, and duck's feet with the dainty black skin peeled from them, and there were many such fine dishes that tickled the tongue very well. Of all those who ate and drank heartily that night, none ate and drank more heartily than Lotus, and the more she ate, the more she was moved with merriment. She sat in her great, carved chair, and there was a slave beside her to put some of every dish into her bowl, but sometimes she would dip for herself, and a slave guided her hand then, and she dipped her porcelain spoon into the dish and put it eagerly to her trembling old mouth and supped it loudly. Meats and all she ate, for she had her teeth all strong and sound still. Then as she grew more merry, she paused sometimes in her eating to tell a lewd, coarse tale or two that made the young men laugh as much as they dared, but they dared not laugh too much before their elders. But she listened for their choking and bursting laughter, and was encouraged to other tales. Wong the landlord himself could scarcely keep his face decent, except that his lady sat there stiff and silent, and he could look at her and be grave. But the ruddy wife of Wong the merchant guffawed loudly, and all the more loudly when she saw that her sister-in-law would not laugh at all. Even Wong the landlord's second wife bit her lips, and while she would not laugh because her lady did not, still she was fain to hold her sleeve across her face and smile behind it. But Lotus grew so free at last when she listened and heard men laugh that for shame's sake she must be silenced, and so the two older brothers plied her with wines to make her drowsy, and the more since they feared she would say some very lewd thing about Wong the Tiger and anger him, and they feared his anger. Because of this tongue of Lotus's, they had not urged Pear Blossom to come to the family feast, and when she answered the messenger they sent that she could ill leave her charges, they let her be, deeming it were best to rouse no memories in Lotus. Thus the night passed happily, and midnight came, and the moon swung high, and soft clouds came up and seemed to swing the moon here and there. The babes were asleep in their mother's bosoms, for the youngest in every family sought long ago his mother's breasts, except the youngest of Wong the landlord's lady, who was by now a proud and slender girl of 13, grave because she was betrothed not long ago. But Wong the landlord's second wife was a warm mother, and she had two in her arms, one a child of a year or more, and the other newly born but a little over a month, for Wong the landlord still liked her. As for Wong the tiger's wives, each held her own, and his little son slept with his head thrown back over his mother's arm, and the moonlight fell full on his face, and Wong the tiger looked often at that small, sleeping face. But after midnight the merriment waned, and the sons of Wong the landlord slipped away one by one, for they had other pleasures waiting, and it wearied them to sit long with elderly folk. They went easily and carelessly, and the second son of Wong the merchant looked longingly after them, but he dared not go because he feared his father. The servants also grew weary and longed for their rest, and they withdrew and leaned in this doorway and that, yawning mightily and muttering to each other, "Their children waked at dawn, and we had to tend them, and now the old ones feast at midnight, and we must tend them still. Will they never let us sleep?" But at last they did separate, but not before Wong the landlord was drunken, and his lady called for his serving men to come and let him lean upon them and so go to his bed. Even Wong the tiger was nearer drunken than he had ever been, but he could walk into his own court. Only Wong the merchant was as smooth and neat as ever, and his wrinkled yellow face was scarcely changed at all, and not red even, for he was one of those who grew more pale and quiet as he drinks more deeply. But of them all, not one had eaten and drunk as Lotus had, And indeed, old as she was now and nearly 78 years old, she had eaten and drunk too well. In the middle hours between midnight and dawn, she moaned and was very restless, for the wine she had drunk seemed to come up in her and heat her to a mighty fever, and all the meats and oily dishes she had eaten lay heavy in her as stone. She turned her head this way and that upon her pillow and was ill at ease, and called out for one thing and another, but nothing eased her. Then suddenly she gave a strange, hoarse scream, and Cuckoo ran to her, and when she heard Cuckoo call out, Lotus muttered something and stared out of her filmed eyes, and tossed her arms and legs, and was suddenly still. Then her fat old face grew dark and purple, and her body rigid and stiff, and she began to draw her breath in quick, stammering gusts, loud enough to be heard in the next court. Wong the Tiger would have heard her if he had not been somewhat drunken and so sleeping more heavily than his wont. But his learned wife slept lightly always, and she heard the cry and rose and came in. She had some slight knowledge of old medicines from her father, who was a physician, and now she drew aside the curtain and the light of earliest dawn fell upon Lotus's frightful face. Then the learned woman cried out, aghast, "It is the old lady's end come on her if we cannot purge her of her wines and meats." She called for hot water and for ginger and for all the medicine she knew, and she tried them all. But it was no use, for Lotus was deaf to all calls and entreaties now, and her teeth were so locked that even when they forced her blackened lips apart, her teeth were locked inside. It was the strangest thing that in an old body like this her teeth should still be sound and white and good, and they lost her her life now, for if there had been a hole somewhere or a gap where a tooth was gone, they would have poured the medicine in somehow, and Cuckoo could even have taken a mouthful and spurted it in with her own lips. But the sound, whole teeth were fast and locked. So Lotus lay breathing and snorting through half the next day, and suddenly, without ever knowing this was her end, she died. The purple of her face faded away, and she turned as pale and as yellow as old wax. Thus did the feasting time end in this death. Then the two elder brothers saw to the making of her coffin, but they had to let her lie a day or so, for the coffin had to be built twice as big as common, and there was none to be found made ready that was broad enough. And while they waited, Cuckoo truly mourned this creature she had tended all these years. Yes, she truly mourned her, even though she went about and collected all she could of the things that were Lotus's still, opening this box and that, and taking all of any value. And she sent her stores out secretly through a hidden back gate, so that at last, when Lotus was put into her coffin, those who served her marveled that she had scarcely a coat fit to be buried in, and they wondered what she had done with the good sum of silver she had as Wong Lung's widow, seeing she had not gamed it away of late years. Yet for all her thieving, Cuckoo mourned for Lotus, and she wiped a few scanty tears away, which, if they were few, were the only tears she had ever shed for anyone. And when the coffin was filled with lime, for Lotus had begun to stink very soon, and when the lid was sealed down and it was carried out the gate to the temple where it was to lie until a day of burial was chosen, Cuckoo walked after the coffin, and hurried her old feet to keep in sight of it until it was put into the empty room of the temple, among many other coffins already there. Then she turned away and went to some place of her own she had somewhere, and came no more to the house of Wong, and she mourned Lotus truly and as truly as she was able. Before the 10 allotted days were past, Wong the Tiger was weary of his brothers and their sons, and the hour of close kinship they had felt in the festival was gone. But he sat the days out, and he watched the coming and going of his brothers' sons, as he went to this house and to that sometimes, and it seemed to him that these sons were but poor, weak fellows, and promised no great good. The two younger sons of Wong the Merchant looked no higher than to be clerks, and they had no ambition except to idle over a counter and laugh, and gossip with the other clerks if their father was not by to see them at it. And even the younger one, who was but 12 years old, was apprenticed in a shop, and he spent his every moment that he dared in tossing pennies with the urchins on the street who gathered at the shop door to wait for him. And because he was the master's son, none dared to say anything against him, nor to refuse him a handful of pennies if he clamored for them out of the shop's till, although they all kept a sharp eye out to see if the lad's father came, so that he might run back to his place while Wong the merchant passed.
And Wong the Tiger saw that this brother of his was so engrossed in his money-making that he never saw his sons at all, nor thought of how they would one day spend as eagerly what he so eagerly gathered together, nor that they only endured their clerking until he died and left them free so that they need not work. And Wong the Tiger saw the sons of his elder brother, how finicking and dandyish they were, and how they must have everything that touched them soft and fine, cool silk in summer and warm, soft furs in winter. Nor would they eat well and robustly as young men ought to do, but they dallied with their food and complained of this because it was too sweet and of that because it was too sour and salt, and they pushed one bowl after another away from them, and the slaves were kept hurrying hither and thither for them. All of this Wong the Tiger saw with anger that it was so. One night he walked alone in the court that had been his father's, and he heard the sound of a woman's giggling laugh. Suddenly a little girl, who was child of some servant or other, ran past the round gate of his court, and she was frightened and breathless, and when she saw Wong the Tiger there she stooped to scuttle past him. But he laid hold of her little arm suddenly and shouted at her, "What woman laughed?" The child shrank away terrified at his glittering eyes, but he had fast hold of her, and she could not twist herself free, and she cast down her eyes and stammered, "The young lord took my sister aside." Then Wong the Tiger asked sternly, "Where?" The child pointed to the back of the next court to an empty room that Lotus had used as a granary, but now it was empty and locked loosely with a great hasp. Then Wong the Tiger dropped the child's arm and she ran like a rabbit. But he strode to that place where she pointed, and he saw the hasp was wide enough so that the doors stood apart from each other nearly a foot, and a slender young body could easily pass through. He stood there in the night and listened, and he heard a woman's laughter, tittering and giggling, and he heard some voice whisper words he could not catch, but he heard them come hot and breathless from the man's throat. Then his old sickness against passion rose in him, and he was about to beat upon that door, except that he stayed himself in the act, and he thought with scorn, "What business is it of mine that there is still such a thing in this same house?" And he went back weary and sickened to his court. But some strange power, even in his disgust, made him restless, and he walked about the court, and while he waited the moon rose late. Soon, out of that inner empty room, he saw a young slave slip between the hasped doors, and she smoothed her hair, and he saw her smiling there in the light of the moon. And she glanced about her swiftly, and went swiftly and soundlessly in her cloth shoes across the tiled empty court, which had been Lotus's. Only once she stopped under the pomegranate tree, and it was to fasten her loosened girdle. And after a time, and all this time Wong the Tiger had stood motionless, his heart throbbing with some sort of disgust that was half sick and half sweet, he saw a young man come sauntering by, and he sauntered as though he were out to see the night and nothing more. Then Wong the Tiger shouted suddenly, "Who is it?" There answered a very pleasant voice, idle and light, "It is I, uncle." Wong the Tiger saw it was indeed his elder brother's eldest son, and some gorge rose in Wong the Tiger's heart, and he could have sprung upon the young man because he told himself he hated lewdness so bitterly, and most of all he hated it in his own blood, and he could not bear it. But he held his hands hard to his sides, for well he knew one cannot kill a brother's son, and well he knew his own temper that if he let it come up he could not stop it where he would. So he only gave a great snort, and he turned blindly away into his room, and he grunted to himself, "I must get out of these courts where one of my brothers is a miser and the other a rake. I cannot breathe this air, for I am a man of freedom and of battle, and I cannot keep my angers bottled in me as men must who live like this with women in courts." And he wished suddenly with some strange desire that there was a need for him to kill someone and shed blood in a cause, so that he could free his heart of a charge it had, which he could not understand. Then to calm himself he forced his thoughts to his little son, and he crept into the room where the child slept in his mother's bed, and he looked down upon the child. The woman slept heavily, as country women will, and her mouth was open and her breath came out very foul, so that even as he bent over his little son, Wong the Tiger was fain to cover his nostrils under his hand. But the child slept serene and still, and looking at his quiet face, grave and